Maybe you've heard this music before in comedies. It's from a classical ballet called Sylvia by a French Romantic era composer named Leo Delibes, and it was a huge inspiration to a Russian about the same age as Delibes who composed some of the greatest ballet music ever, including Sleeping Beauty. See what he did there? Took some of that pizzicato from Delibes. And our classical music opinionator, Fran Hoffner, writes that without Leo Delibes, there'd be no Tchaikovsky. And when we asked Fran what she wanted to start the new year with, she said Delibes and Tchaikovsky. Fran, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me back.
You're there at WBEZ in Chicago.
Yes, home for the holidays.
Home for the holidays. Good for you. Well, this is a big claim. No Tchaikovsky without Leo Delibes.
Yeah, I really do believe it.
Well, he said as much. Tchaikovsky wrote to friends. What did he say about Delibes' music?
He said that it was the first time in a ballet that the music itself was sort of the main interest, the spectacle.
And coming from him, of course, that's something. Let's listen to the very beginning of Sylvia. And you say right there with the cymbals crashing, this is a very opening. It feels as if Sylvia is welcoming you inside. Inside what? What's the story?
The story is somewhat incoherent, but it's a little bit of a classic boy meets girl. Girl maybe orchestrates her own kidnapping, is kidnapped, and he has to save her. But there are a lot of twists and turns, and I think part of the reason why the music is the spectacle of Sylvia is maybe because the story of Sylvia is a little difficult to follow.
Well, but and what is it about the music that makes it so, to you, compelling?
I think it's fairly, I'm thinking simple, but I don't mean that it sounds easy. There is a lot of elements of folk music in it, so I think it sort of elevated this really common, known type of music in France and made it this high art that sort of could like bring in the masses to appreciate it.
Let's listen to Cortège Rustique, which is a rustic parade. You wrote that you don't even mind the tambourine.
No. typically annoyed, but really love how it's working here.
Yeah. And there's something, as you write, that's hummable about this music.
Yeah, it's the kind of melody you can really take home with you.
Let's listen to the Dance of the Priestess. There's this mysterious oboe solo. Let's listen.
Yeah.
You can't hear this from Delibes' Sylvia and not be thinking about Tchaikovsky. Here's the Nutcracker. But you hear it. Homage, perhaps?
Yeah, they both have this really seductive kind of feminine energy.
Yeah.
I think that's so, it feels very magical.
Well, and we're talking about ballet music here.
Mm-hmm.
Do we even know the ballet for Sylvia?
I'm not very familiar
with
it.
And that's the point. It's more that you are caring about this music, and that's what Tchaikovsky said in praising it.
I feel like in listening to it, I don't have to have seen it. I can just love it when it's on and I'm just living my life.
The priestess dance, you say, all but cartwheels into mm-hmm. Sylvia's re-entrance. Let's listen. Even here you say there's something a little nutcrackery about
Definitely.
It.
Well, there's this really strong exuberance to it. And, you know, I don't know the story of Sylvia very well. And yet I still feel this, you know, this emotional return of this character, despite not having any frame of reference for her.
Right. Talk about Tchaikovsky's greatest heroine, Sleeping Beauty, Princess Aurora, as she's known in the ballet. Here's some music from the Rose Adagio, where she's partnered one after the other with several princes who want to marry her. Very difficult for the ballerina who has to hold her balance on toes throughout. Let's listen.
Yeah. And so that's all spectacle.
Yeah.
That's sort of the takeaway from Daylieb.
Okay, a couple questions. First of all, we know this is the story of Aurora, who's cursed at her birth, that when she turns 16, she's going to prick her finger and die. But the lilac fairy comes and says, no, let's just make it. She'll sleep for 100 years. I always wondered if she knew she was going to prick her finger at 16, why no gloves?
Yeah.
The whole time. So that
it's
would never happen.
Question.
But there you go. Mm-hmm. And then she's awakened. We know that in 1888, the director of the Imperial Theater in Moscow told Tchaikovsky he's going to write this plot based on, you know, Grimm Brothers' fairy tale version of a French story. He, Tchaikovsky, loved the story. Tell us more about his writing it and what this music meant to him.
He really blew through the writing of this. I think he said he did it in 40 days. You can feel that sort of rushed passion to it. It really has that energy to it. And I think Tchaikovsky was also looking for maybe something of a comeback after Swan Lake, which was not so warmly received at the time. And this is, I think, a much more populist ballet, to use such a commonly known sort of fairy tale.
So Swan Lake didn't go so well, and now he writes Sleeping Beauty. One of your favorite passages is the Garland Waltz. Let's listen. Of course, Fran, dance fans are picturing this Garland waltz with the dancers. But you're just loving it for the music. It was used in the 1959 Disney film of Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
Let's listen.
I know you. I walked with you once upon a dream. I know you. The tear in your eyes is so familiar.
Yeah, I've always been so partial to that, to the Disney adaptation of Sleeping Beauty. I think it's like one of the most beautiful animated Disney films.
Oh, boy. Defend that, because you know classicists are going to be in uproar.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Seeing it on film also, I think it's just one of the most dazzling movies. But, you know, you see a lot of classical music adapted into film scores all the time. And this was one where I knew the Disney song first, and then just so happened to be listening to the Sleeping Beauty ballet and never put two and two together that this waltz was essentially adapted into one of probably the most famous song from that movie.
Yeah, beautiful. I want to go back to where we started, the pizzicato from Sylvia, mm-hmm. which I thought, oh, I didn't even know I knew Sylvia. And there's that piece. Let's listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
did that become such a joke?
I don't know. Pizzicato has really endured as a comedic scoring, perhaps because it feels so light and easy.
Well, this is used by the Marx Brothers. You can just see them, you know. And I also picture, you know, large ungainly men dancing to it.
Sure, yeah.
But it's from a piece you highly recommend.
It is. It has that, you know, simplistic spectacle of the music that you don't have to know the story or even have an image conjured in your mind to appreciate sort of what Daylieb is doing.
That's Fran Hoffner. She writes about classical music for WQXR in New York. Fran, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.